down the road, you'll be more disappointed by the things you didn't do than the ones you did. So dream, explore, say yes to life. Be inspired to live life as an exciting adventure of discovery. You are listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, and I'm your host, Mark Sussnow. Hi, everybody. This is Mark Sussnow. You are listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that hopefully makes a difference in your life. And thank you for all of you out there that tune into our show regularly. And as you know, every week we have people that I consider cutting-edge thought leaders. And years ago, I read a book called Care of the Soul by Thomas More. And it was, 20, 25 years ago. And I always remember that book. And then I went on, last year, some of you know, I came out with A Soul of Uncertainty. And I started questioning what the word soul means in terms of some people equate it with spirit. And also some people I used to think of when I would hear a musician or a singer. And there's a certain quality that they have. And I would think anyway, wow, they have soul. And so there was a quality inside a person that projected. And then when I wrote my book, I started to think of it in a different way. And what is it? What does soul mean? What do we really mean by that? Is it our core essence? So, when I received an email from Thomas More's publicist that he had a new book called Ageless Soul, I invited him to be our guest. And Thomas was a monk for 13 years. He's a psychotherapist. And by the way, his book, Care of the Soul, was a number one bestseller. So he has an interesting background. And Thomas, I know we've put a lot of energy into making this interview happen. So thanks for sticking with me and welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show.
Thank you for having me, Mark. I appreciate it very much.
And I'm looking forward to what I'm curious about. You have an Ageless Soul, your new book, The Lifelong Journey Toward Meaning and Joy. And in the description that your publisher sent, you said More provides readers with a new way to think about aging. In contrast to the perception that aging means diminishment, Moore regards aging as a process by which we become more fully ourselves, a series of initiations rather than losses. And what prompted you to write this book? And also what I'm curious about is your first book, Care of the Soul. What prompted you to write your first book, Care of the Soul? What was going on in your life that you decided to write Care of the Soul?
Well, as you said, I was a Catholic monk for 13 years. So I had a pretty serious life from being very young. I mean, a lot of a fun life, but at the same time, devoted to important things. And I studied the soul when I was a kid, I mean, it was part of life. And eventually I found myself getting a PhD in religious studies, and I came across the works of Carl Jung, and I read his complete works. That's 20 volumes in my first year there of studies, and that really affected me. And he wrote about the soul. And then I met James Hillman, who was a follower of Jung, but went his own way, and he became a close friend. And he wrote several books about soul. So, and then the poets and, so many people's songs about soul. So I think it put all that together. And I didn't decide. It just was my fate to devote my life to writing about soul and teaching it.
And so you decided to come out with, so this is, so what was going on in your life, like, 20, exactly, like, you 20, so did you, like, all of a sudden say, I'm going to write this book, and, or did somebody approach you about writing the book, or what
no, no one
there?
Approached me at all. I was doing some psychotherapy, and I realized I was doing it in my own way, in a way that was, I mean, I had been trained in kind of a Rogerian person-centered therapy, but I was using Jung's ideas and Hillman's and doing a lot of dream work as part of it, and looking at a person's stories as their deep myth, the deep narrative that held their lives together. And I, talking to other therapists, I realized that they weren't doing the same thing I was doing. So I thought I'd write a book about it. My idea was to replace the notion of psychology with the care of the soul. And the word psychotherapy can be translated directly as care of the soul. That's what the word means in Greek. So I decided to put all that together, my experience and my studies, and put it together into a book that would be kind of a basic handbook, you know, a starting book on the idea of soul.
What would be your, as I said in the, you know, in the introduction about soul, it's a big word. It's a big word. And there have been lots of poems written about soul, and I've read some of them, and it's such a loaded word. What do you mean by soul?
It's really hard to put in words, but what I mean is something quite ordinary that we experience. That is, that I think that when we have certain experiences, let's say of love or of disaster or a crisis or illness, we're shaken so deeply that it goes beyond what psychology can deal with. It's more than emotional. It touches the very structure and foundation of who we are. And you get in touch with the fact, you discover that you are so much deeper than you thought. That life affects you so much that it's very hard to describe what you're going through. I just got an email today from someone whose son committed suicide. And he told me in his email that he's just empty, like there's nothing left. And he wanted, you know, some words of help to get through it or support. And to me, he's getting in touch with his soul in that very difficult way. It's beyond what you ever experience. You discover that you are deeper than you ever thought you could be. That's what I mean by soul. And care of the soul means to do those things in life that keep that deep foundation of who we are, keep it positive and healthy and beautiful.
Mm-hmm. So, Care of the Soul comes out 25 years ago. Now you have a new book out about aging.
This is my 30th book now, yeah.
Your 30th. Yeah. 30th book.
So I've been doing a lot of writing since Care of the Soul. Yeah.
Right. So, how many books came out between Care of the Soul and Age of Soul?
The total is 30, so I think it's probably 25 books since Care of the Soul.
Wow. And what I'm curious about, you're at age 77, you write a book about aging, Ageless Soul.
Right.
And did you find any answers to your own questions about aging?
I think I did. Every time I write a book, I'm really working things out for myself. I don't have answers. Mm-hmm. I don't write a book because I know what I'm talking about. I try to work it out. So, with aging,
so it's more like
77.
Yeah, it's more like an exploration.
Like an exploration, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted to do at this point. I thought, I haven't written about getting older. I make a distinction between aging and getting older, somewhat. The word aging can mean those two. It can mean either getting older, but it can also mean getting better. It's like I started out with the idea of aged cheese or aged whiskey or wine. You know, these things that are prized because they have been around for a long time and something has happened to them.
I like that idea of thinking of aging as we're getting better. I mean, I try to think of it that way too. We're certainly have more wisdom, and more confidence. And I don't know, I found as we get older, at least I have, that I've learned how to enjoy myself more, enjoy life, just being with myself and other people. I think that's a shift that I've made. You know, have you noticed that too?
Totally. I mean, that's a very big part of it. So mm-hmm. many things change. I don't think we're, you know, when I think back when I was in my 20s and 30s, what a task it was just to get through days that, you know, trying to
right.
get a job and a career and could be educated mm-hmm. and have relationships that worked. I mean, it was mm-hmm. really hard. I wouldn't want to go back to that part of it. And so
right.
this part of life is much more relaxed, and I can devote myself to other things that to me really matter.
And I know that we were talking off air, and you're living in New Hampshire on a lake. Did I get that right?
Yes. Yes, I am. Yeah.
Kind of in a remote part of New Hampshire. That must yes. be very peaceful, huh?
Very peaceful, very quiet. Surrounded by mainly the animals and the nature. It's very nice. I mean, we're not that far from towns. New Hampshire doesn't have a big city, really. Or any highway, uh-huh. so it's basically a pretty quiet, friendly place.
Uh huh. And what I like, what your publicist sent me was, aging with soul is a lifelong process. Even young people can age well if they're embracing their life experiences and using them to grow spiritually.
Absolutely.
And that's like a very profound statement. And I noticed that. In your book, Ageless Soul, you have a chapter on senior sexuality and mention yeah. quiet sex. What's your basic approach to this concern for older people?
I think that people, when they get older, get worried that they're not sexual the way they used to be. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's a bit, we're not anything the way we used to be. You know, things change when you get mm-hmm. older. And you adjust and you take on, just as we do throughout life. We go through periods of life where we have to change and adjust. You do that when you get older. To be a 20-year-old sexual person doesn't really make sense when you're 70. It's like
right.
nothing makes sense if you try to be a 20-year-old when you're 70.
Right.
So what you have to do is reimagine your sexuality a bit. And realize how important it is to be a sexual person, not be able to perform perfectly all the time. I mean, it's just like 20-year-olds can do so many things physically that you can't do when you're older, but you can have a richer experience as you get older, and you can be more intimate with people, more intimate with the world around you, and that's a part of sexuality. So I mean, by being a sexual person, rather than to trying to just have sex in a brilliant way.
And so what I hear you say is that intimacy is a big factor in this.
It's a very big factor. The capacity for intimacy. I think that as you get older, you develop that capacity more. You're not in the hero mode. You're not trying to, you know, beat out other people for various things.
Uh-huh.
You're not trying to... Uh-huh. become some great person. You're just being yourself, and that means you're capable of being closer to someone else because you're not in competition with them. You know,
I like the way you, I like the way you kind of described it as you're not in hero mode.
That's right.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just think about it. Would you like to see a movie where you have a bunch of 70 and 80-year-olds being the heroes, fighting all the battles? That would be absurd.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
right.
It's similar. We don't
mm-hmm.
need to
no,
do
I know.
That. We don't need to be heroes anymore.
Mm-hmm. I like that. It kind of, in a way, takes the pressure off.
It takes the pressure off for other things to come forward. And our sexuality is part of that. You can be sexual then in a way where you are more present, maybe. Where you are
mm-hmm.
not forcing it so much.
Mm-hmm. Now I know for you, you developed this real sense of presence. I mean, you were, you've been a lifelong seeker. You were a monk for many years. But how can the average person that's, say, in the world, busy in the world, working, has got a family, what can they do to become more present?
Well, I don't think there's any difference, really. I'm just an ordinary Joe myself, really. I mean, those other things are there, but that doesn't mean anything. My dad was a plumber. I come from a family of plumbers, you know. That's who I am, essentially. I'm a plumber who writes books on the soul. So the ordinariness, I think, is just part of it. It's that's the way everyone should be. We're all ordinary people, every single individual. So what we have to do, maybe people are not writers like me, you know, they don't write books, I understand. But they can just be with their neighbors and with their family and have some pets around and take care of their home. I mean, all of this is what it means to be human. You don't have to accomplish great things. You can be a real person just by living your life.
And I want to come back again to your time in being a monk. What was in your life? I mean, you took this certain vow. What was going on in your life at the time that you decided to go on this path for 13 years?
Well, I was just a kid. I was a child when I left home to enter a monastic style of life. I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
And, I stayed in it till I was about 26. And, I was so attracted to the life of the priest. I wanted to be a priest. And it so happened that the priest in the church where I was were monks. And so I went into that life, and quickly I discovered how much I loved it. I mean, I was able to have so much privacy. I'm a very private person, likes to be alone a lot. And there I am in this community. I'm around a lot of people, but I also have a lot of safeguards for my privacy. I love that. And I love the spiritual emphasis and the emphasis on art. And I was in a very intelligent group. They weren't overly pious or sentimental. You know, they weren't rule-bound so much. And they loved good ideas, and they loved the arts. So that was just perfect for me. And I focused a lot on music when I was a monk. And so I put that together, being a musician and a monk, and put them all together. And I loved that life very much. But I came to a point where I realized that it was over, that I had done it, that I had, okay, I've done this now for my life. And if I keep doing it, it'll just be too much repetition. The life wasn't in it anymore for me. So I left it and had to go searching for something else.
And what was that?
Well, I flubbed around for a while. I didn't know what I was going to do. And then someone suggested I get a PhD in religion, which I thought was the last thing in the world I wanted to do, because I kind of given up on religion when I left the monk's life. I gave up on religion altogether. So I asked them, can I study religion here and not be part of any religion? They said, sure. So I discovered religion in a much, much bigger, broader sense. And I ever since then, I've not been as attached to any particular religious tradition or church or anything like that. But I see the whole of life as having the step that is sacred. And I consider myself a theologian of this everyday secular sacredness. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've been doing with all my books.
Mm-hmm. And you got your, you went to, study religion at Syracuse, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. And what about the music that, you know, I'm curious about, I think I shared with you, I'm also a musician. What instrument did you play?
I played piano and organ, which I really liked, but I was not really a performer. You know, it wasn't my thing. Mm-hmm. I was very interested in music theory and composition, and I began writing music when I was quite young. And I studied composition, too, when I was a monk. I got a degree in composition. And I studied composition in graduate school and took it from there. I continue to write and arrange music, even today, for myself. I don't do it very publicly.
Mm-hmm. But, do you play every day now with your piano?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm a classical musician, so I play Bach every day, and Brahms, and Mozart, and Chopin.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
One thing here I know Nita said, it says, you seem to approve people trying to stay young with qualifications. Could you explain what you mean by that?
Yes. In my work as a therapist, one of the things I do is I don't moralize. I don't tell people you shouldn't be doing this and shouldn't be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
What we do is try to see the question is, what does your soul want? That's a very important question. What does your soul want? Now, if people want to feel younger and look younger, I think that's perfectly legitimate. And so there are ways they can do it. I suggest being young from the inside out. That's the best way. So be a young person and get in touch, stay in touch with your youth, your youthfulness and your free imagination, and don't become an old fuddy-duddy in the way you think.
Right.
And if you do that, I think you will look young. My dad died at 100, and he looked very young at 100.
Wow.
He looked young all his life. He was a young person all his life. That's my model. You know, you can be young without, and that will help you look young. And if people want to then, you know, dye their hair or get plastic surgery, whatever you want to do, I think it's fine. But if you do those things and you're not young at heart, young in yourself,
right.
It's
right.
Phony. It's not the real thing. And then people see that, and it looks odd.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, there is this, everybody wants to look younger than they are, to look youthful. And I found that, and as I'm curious what your thoughts are, that I found that my desire to learn new things is greater than ever. I'm keep wanting to learn new things. I think I share with you, the piano is relatively a new instrument for me as opposed to, you know, my background as a horn player. I've recently, I've been a meditator for years. I've gotten into Qigong and I'm always curious, very curious. Yeah. And where do you find curiosity goes in your bailiwick of tools?
Well, I'm kind of a, you know, I'm a writer, so I'm surrounded by my books, and I'm always trying to discover new things, you know, discover new ways of thinking about things and new writers. Mm-hmm. I trust. Like right today, I spent most of my day today writing a detective story, and I absolutely love it. That's not what I'm known for, you know. I mean, people would be surprised probably to know that's how I'm spending my time. But I loved it. I loved the writing of fiction. And to me, that's moving into an area that is not one that I've really explored very much. So that's how I do it. I try to move around. And what I do, I try to do it in a way where I'm alive and I'm young. And as you say, exploring things.
Yes, and so for you, writing a detective, that's what I did with The Soul of Uncertainty. I decided to make it a parable rather than just a self-help book, creating characters I found it was much more exciting for me as a writer to do that because it made them come alive, and especially because you tell the story through the characters, and it was a very exciting adventure for me. And
yeah,
it sounds like with a detective.
Yes, with the detective story, it's similar to me. Yes.
Yeah. So, what's the name of your detective story?
Squanto's Witch. Squanto is a Native American in New England who helped make the connection between the original residents here and the Europeans coming over. He was able to work with both. And the witch is someone on Cape Cod who practices some witchcraft and feels that Squanto with her way of connecting her paganism with the Puritanism of the New Englanders.
So is that book out now, or is it?
Well, I don't know if
it'll
ever come out. I'm just writing it. I have no idea
right.
if anyone will want to publish it, or if I want to do anything with it. I don't know. You know, it's hard. I don't want to get into this, but it's hard as a writer if you try something new. Your readers don't like it too much usually.
Uh-huh.
You know, they like to, they like you to be the same person you've always been as a writer. So
right.
If
they want you to be predictable,
it,
right? They want you to be predictable.
They want you to be predictable, exactly. And so if I do publish it, it'll be under a different name.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, it's important. What I found, too, is to keep being open to new things, so that aliveness keeps exciting us, keeping us alive. You know, that again, that curiosity and reinventing ourselves. And what is right now? Because I know we're running out of time here. What inspires you right now?
Well, I think the biggest thing that inspires me right now is my daughter. My daughter, her name is Ajita, her professional name, she's a musician. And I homeschooled her and taught her some music theory. And she became a musician. She writes music now, and she sings and produces albums that have a kind of very popular but also kind of a spiritual quality to them. And she studied in India and in Ireland. She puts those two cultures together in her music. And she's doing extremely well, and she's so, so talented and smart. And she's in, I just talked to her today, she's in Chile performing in South America. So, you know, it's just so exciting to see life happen, you know, to see her there. I never thought I'd ever have a child in the first place, you know, and to have her there and doing something that means so much to her and to me, it's just, that's the most exciting thing in my life.
Mm-hmm. And what gives you hope right now?
She does. She has, you know, she's really trying to help people out and use her music to create some understanding in the world. That's why she's in South America. And, I think we are in a very, very bad time in our history, politically and in terms of government and so on, not only in the United States, but in the world altogether. And all kinds of important values are being tossed aside these days. It's just, you hate to get up to see that happening day after day. So it just encourages me to get out there and have my voice heard for very true, very old values. I'm very modern, but I'm also very traditional. And I want to get those old values out very strongly and do whatever I can to. I love this country, and I'd love to see it really thrive and not fall back into self-protection and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So if there was one thought you wanted to leave our listeners with, what would that be? Or what is that?
I would say live your own life. Be an individual. Be unique. It's so important to be yourself. Let your life flow from that deep place that I call a soul. Let it flow from there. Be eccentric. Don't do what other people expect you to do. Love the world. Love life. And base your entire life, everything you do, on love and giving to other people rather than protection of yourself. That's a dead end. So reach out to other people and take risks.
Well, I want to ask you one more thing. So people can get your books through some of the local bookstores and of course on Amazon. Is that right?
Yes, the various stores online like Amazon and Barnes and Noble and so on. They have all my books. Almost all my books are in print. Almost all those books and. You can get them there. You can go to my website, thomasmoresoul.com. And, you go to any bookstore. That's what I would recommend. Go to your local bookstore. They are so wonderful. They're local and bookstores.
Well, Thomas, this has been a privilege and a delight to share this time with you. And because you've been an inspiration to me. As I said, I read your book many, many years ago, and I've really enjoyed this conversation. And you're making the time to make this happen. So I want to thank you for being the inspiration that you are and being who you are, and thank you for inspiring so many other people. So thanks again for being our guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. And to all of you out there, you know that every week we have hopefully some amazing people that will inspire you to think bigger, to think outside the box, and to perhaps take a risk and do things that you put off for many, many years, and to be yourself and to grow into your aliveness and be a person that is a light for many others to shine. So thanks again. And until next week, journey on. Thanks for listening. I hope you feel inspired to take the next step in your life. And if you haven't already, please take the time to visit my website at inspirepossibility.com and discover the various services and products we offer that could just very well change your life.